Roll call, Chair Wood.
Here.
Vice Chair Turner. Commissioner Christensen.
Here.
Commissioner Shelton.
Here.
Commissioner Tovar.
Here.
Commissioner Miller. Commissioner Velez.
Here.
We have quorum.
You made it.
Just in time.
Inside glasses on.
Yes. Been on volleyball court.
All right. First up, we have our informational item. Presentation on the roles and responsibilities of council advisory groups. I understand we are the first commission to receive this instruction. So let's all be on our best behavior and see what they have to tell us.
We're very excited to have our city clerk here today, Michael McDonald. He'll be providing this presentation on the roles and responsibilities of our council advisory groups. So, Michael, take it away.
Shall I pull up right over here?
Yes.
Perfect.
Next slide.
So if I start up here from the end down there, it's the chair song. All right. Well, thank you so much. For the record, Michael McDonald, city clerk. It's nice to see you all. Some of you I've met, some of you I'm just meeting for the first time. So it's good to be here. And thank you to the staff for having me. Chair Wood, as you noted, this is the first commission that we're visiting to talk about roles and responsibilities of our council advisory groups, and really look forward to being able to meet with all of our different council advisory groups. We're going to talk a little bit about some changes to the council protocols, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to come to all of our council advisory groups and talk a little bit more about the legislative process. And so let's go ahead and jump right into it. So this is a training for effective participation and collaboration. We can go ahead and jump to the next slide. First, I want to start by thanking you all. I know that this is a lot to be here on your volunteer time, and I know that you dedicate a lot to the city, and it's really invaluable service that we rely on heavily, both city council and our city staff. So I want to start by saying thank you all. The work that you do is really invaluable, and the recommendations and support that you offer to both city council and staff is it's really great. Council, it's impossible for them to be able to be experts in everything or engage in every conversation throughout the city with our 110,000 residents, and that's where they really rely on our council advisory groups. I also just want to acknowledge that the process is changing. And so I understand from some of our council advisory groups that they're also looking for opportunities to engage more with council, and council's looking for more opportunities to engage with our council advisory groups as well. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but I wanted to start the presentation by saying thank you very much to for your service to the city. And we understand, especially a four-year term can be a long commitment to the city on a volunteer basis, and we're all busy and realize there's a lot going on in your life. So thank you very much for being here, not only tonight, but thank you for your service to the city. Perfect. So I want to highlight here the Council Advisory Group Handbook. You see the image on the left. It was adopted in 2021, and we are currently going through a process of updating the Council Advisory Handbook as well. But that is kind of our guiding, enabling, quote-unquote, enabling legislation, if you will, for the roles and responsibilities of our council advisory groups. So the information that I'm going over tonight is information that's pulled directly from that document, right? So we're looking at several different documents. We're looking at the council advisory group handbook, and we have our municipal code as well, our guiding documents. And so the council advisory groups, of course, play an essential role in city governments. And so providing informed advice on policy matters, encouraging public participation by acting as a conduit between the community and the council, and serving as the eyes and ears, we like to say, as the city council, as you all are out in the community. And then, of course, your work helps support council decisions with thoughtful recommendations. If you can go ahead and jump to the next slide. So you might ask yourself, where do council advisory groups, or I'll continue to refer to them as CADs, where do CADs kind of fit into the wheel of local governance? Of course, at the top, we have our community, and our community is who we serve and elects our city council. The city council then appoints the city manager and the city attorney. And then we have our commissions and committees, you all, appointed directly by the city council through one of the council subcommittees and then appointed by city council. And then the city manager oversees all city staff. So then the city departments fall under the city manager. So you can see here that the council advisory groups like CLAG, the CAGs play a really important role in that governance structure. But also it's important to understand as well that the city council is the final decision action body for the city. And you can see here city council being at the top. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what that means for our council advisory groups moving forward. But it's the community that elects council, and it's council that sets the vision. Staff is responsible for enforcing that vision, and our council advisory groups help staff and council in the implementation of that vision. You can go ahead and jump to the next slide. Great. So I mentioned that there were some changes in the city council protocols in late 2024 and again readopted in early 2025 in February. The policymaking decision process. So some of the feedback we would hear from our council advisory groups was they weren't quite sure how to get items to council, and there wasn't a prescribed process for how items get from council to a council advisory group. So we did go through a revision, which is Appendix C of the adopted city council protocols. Those documents are available located on the city's website. It's a real easy search in the city's homepage. Type in protocols and you can find the city council protocols. Section 9 deals with decision-making process, and Appendix C has this nice document that we're going to go through real quick. But really, it outlines the city's legislative process. So it's going to outline how the council advisory groups are going to be interacting with city council moving forward. So you can see here that the way an item gets submitted, an item can be submitted by an individual council member, an item can be submitted by a council advisory group, and then an item can be submitted by staff. And so there is now what's called the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee is a city council subcommittee that was recently created. The purpose of the Rules Committee is to do an initial review of essentially policy consideration items. Those are items that come from city council. And then they're also responsible for any protocol revisions and legislative item platform items that deal with the legislative platform or support or opposition of legislation, state or federal legislation. Those are the items that fall under the purview of the Rules Committee. How does that impact you all? So what we have now is a prescribed process of review. It's going to start with city council policy considerations, items introduced by city council. The Rules Committee is going to review it, and you'll see here step one is that it gets introduced. Step two is that it gets reviewed, and at the Rules Committee level, the Rules Committee will make a decision as to whether or not this item should first be reviewed by a council advisory group, it should go to a council subcommittee, it should go back to the author, for example, or it should go to staff. So what it does is it creates a prescribed process for the council to send something directly to a council advisory group. In Section 9 of the protocols, it also outlines exactly the process. So there's a timeline, for example, a timeline by which the council or the council advisory group must act on a council referral, and the process for submitting it back to city council is outlined in that document. But the idea is, and I'll give you our first example, it hasn't happened at the Rules Committee quite just yet, but there was a referral from a council member to create a program in City Hall to light up the front of City Hall with different colored light bulbs. For City Hall. There was a cultural event where they requested City Hall to be lit up a specific color, and we don't have a prescribed program or process for that. So that's an example of an item that can be referred to the Rules Committee, which then staff would make a recommendation in that specific of potentially having either Arts and Culture or Parks and Rec review that item before a recommendation is made to council. So the Rules Committee is a prescribed process for how an item will get referred to a committee and then how a committee sends an item back to city council. And so I wanted to highlight that process here. I'm giving you a very high level overfoot view because we could talk in detail about the legislative process, but I would strongly encourage you all to read Section 9 of those city council protocols at a 3,000 foot level. What it does is it sets a timeline for how the council advisory must act. And then when they send it back to the city manager, or city council, there's a timeline by which the city manager must agendize an item as well. It also provides the city manager an opportunity to weigh in. The commission may have a recommendation and the city manager might say this is the best recommendation that we've seen and we fully endorse the recommendation of the Parks and Rec Commission. In that instance, then the city manager has a prescribed process to be able to submit what we call a companion report attached to the commission. The commission itself, as one of those submitters, might also, in alignment with their work plan, which we'll talk about in a bit, make a recommendation to city council on something that wasn't referred to them. this is the prescribed process. So if the commission was to make a recommendation on something that wasn't referred to them, it would go to the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee would review it and determine the best path for it, whether it should be reviewed by, say, the Finance, Audit, Budget Committee of City Council because there's financial implications, or it should be reviewed by the Economic Development Subcommittee of City Council because of its economic development impacts to the city, as an example. So the Rules Committee is going to prescribe that process. So I would encourage you to review that when you have additional time. But that's the process now of how items are going to be moved through. So the commission can, you know, the commission could always make recommendations prior or outside of this process to City Council. But the process was unclear. It was unclear from staff. It was unclear from commissions. It was unclear from council. So what we've tried to do is prescribe a process by which items can go from council and to council, from our council advisory group.
So the Rules Committee is kind of the gatekeeper both directions.
Exactly. And the Rules Committee is comprised of the mayor and two other council members appointed by the mayor. And the Rules Committee will rotate on an annual basis. The mayor will appoint every year the committee members to the Rules Committee. Go ahead and go to the next slide. One thing I will highlight just in terms of your comment, they're the gatekeepers in a sense that they're going to do the first level of review. I will share that in the policy, there is still a process to get something agendized, even if the committee does not support the recommendation, for example. Mm-hmm. So there's a process by which a commission, and we're going to talk a little bit about it, might have a differing opinion from the city manager or staff or council. There's still a process for how you engage with council on that, and it's structured in the protocols. So how does the commission set their priorities, and how does council set the priorities for the council advisory groups? It's through the work plans. I know that you all are very familiar with the work plans. It's on your agenda for later this evening, but the Parks and Rec Commission, Arts and Culture, several of our commissions have been very consistent with adopting their work plans since 2020. What's not been as consistent is our full process, because it was a new process that was implemented, adopted in 2020, the work plans implemented 2021, which we all know what happened in 2020. So COVID put us back 2 or 3 years and really getting this process fully fleshed out. This is the first year where the process is going to be fully fleshed out, and we've aligned all of our different commissions. One of the challenges I'll share with you in the work plans itself is there's a wide variety of what our council advisory groups do. So a planning commission work plan versus a mobile home rent review board work plan versus a parks and recreation commission work plan. Those are very different, right? And so we had to work through that, because some of them are state mandates, and that's the work that they do, and others are advisory capacity, like the Parks and Rec Commission. So every February through June, the council advisory group should be adopting their work plan, which you all are doing now. And how do you adopt your work plan? From the council strategic priorities that takes place in late January or February on a 2-year cycle. Council is going to set their strategic priorities. In those strategic priorities, there's going to be work plans for the departments. And that's how the council advisory groups are going to set their priorities, based off of those work plans, based off of council priorities. And so the work plans, the real intent of the groups, the council advisory groups work plans, is to align with those strategic priorities. That's how council is going to communicate to you. Council is going to communicate to you through strategic priorities. How are you going to communicate your work back to council? With the deliverance of that work plan. So From February to June, you're going to adopt your work plan. In July, the city council is going to adopt their budget at the end of June. And that's how the city is going to implement those work plans from the departments and the work plans from the council advisory groups. So the work plans will go to council in July. That is an opportunity then where the council sees your work plan and can call you up and ask questions. We're still working that process out. For Brown Act reasons and other noticing requirements, we will most likely have the chair and potentially the vice chair present at the meeting to be able to answer questions from council. But we're still working that process out. But the work plans will go to council, and that's council's opportunity to talk to the commission about the work plan, make any changes to the work plan, suggest changes, and then the work plan gets adopted, and then the commission goes into full work for the next year working on that work plan. Same process for staff. Staff has those work plans. And so what you should all be thinking about is objectives for the upcoming year. Expected outcomes and milestones are important because council wants to be able to measure things. Key activities and initiatives within the group's scope. And then opportunities for public engagement and community input is always very important from the advisory level as well. So the work plans serve as your roadmap. That's your roadmap to guide the group's efforts. And then most importantly, you refer to the municipal code for your enabling legislation. Now, the Parks and Rec Commission is a little bit more broad because of the advisory capacity advocating on behalf of Parks and Rec. Some of our groups are, it's a very prescribed, and the advisory is very detailed, and they're different. So you always want to refer to the municipal code in terms of what falls within the purview of the council advisory group's role. Go ahead and go to the next slide.
Should we be looking at a fiscal year, July to June, or?
So what I can share is we'll continue with the current process we're using for work plans, since mm-hmm. we've done that for the last few years. Once we receive that kind of defined process that the city will be transitioning to, we'll bring it back to commission. We'll be able to revisit the current work plan that you have, make changes, adjustments as needed, and we will then, if it's defined, do the fiscal year, July through June. But as of now, the current work plan approved by Parks and Rec and Arts and Culture Commission is what we'll be moving forward with, because we don't have that direction yet.
Yeah, and also understand this is the first year for council managing their strategic priority session in a different way and going to a two-year cycle. So sometimes that puts us in those ruts of calendar year, fiscal year, two-year, one-year. We'll work through what that looks like. But for your knowledge, council will be adopting their final strategic priorities on March 25th. And so that is when staff will then have those. And I imagine that's the process that Emily mentioned, that you all would have an opportunity to look at your work plan and to look at council's strategic priorities. So one thing I wanted to touch on real quick was, in your role as an advisory member, you're engaging with the community, right? That's what we need you to do, to be the eyes, the ears of council. So I wanted to talk just briefly on advocacy, communication, and press engagement. So as it relates to advocacy, it's important to remember and prioritize the community's interests over special groups. One thing that we say a lot is, you know, we may have 50 people in the council chambers, but we always have to remember that there's 110,000 residents of the city of Ventura. We want to be prioritizing the community's interests over special groups. You may be, there may be folks who you hear from more, right? You hear the term all the time, the squeaky wheel gets the wheel, or the squeaky wheel gets the oil. We want to ensure that all of the decisions and the advocacy on behalf of the city is done for the community's interest as a whole. We want to align at all times the council advisory group's recommendations with those council strategic priorities. And then we want to avoid departmental budget program advocacy unless directed by city council. So the council advisory handbook and the municipal code are really clear on this provision. If you interfere with city government, it is a cause for removal from the if you interfere with the city manager or department's roles, it is cause for removal from a council advisory group. It can be real easy to say, hey, department man, if you just we're going to go out and advocate for you to get one more person, because we know, we hear from the community, if you just had one more staff person doing that role, that's departmental. That's a departmental decision, and that's a departmental budget decision. That's not what we're asking for you all to advocate on behalf. We're asking you all to advocate on behalf of council's strategic priorities as they relate to parks and recreation, for example. And you may be asked to communicate with the press, which is normal, right? However, we need to always ensure in that instance that you're presenting the groups as a whole, and you need to have authorization. And so if there's ever a message that's approved by the committee, it needs to be approved by the full committee. We can't have one commissioner speak on behalf of the city or speak on behalf of a council advisory group. And anytime you are speaking with the press, positively or not, you need to ensure that comments reflect the group's majority approved position. So you may disagree with the group's overall majority approved decision, 5-2 split vote, for example. You're one of the two. The 5 was approved. So you need to ensure that your comments reflect the group. You need to avoid promising outcomes on behalf of the city, the council, and staff. I know that can be really challenging when people say, I really want you to do this, and you say, I'm going to do my best to do that. We want to avoid making promises, and we want to hear the feedback, and an appropriate way to respond is that we will follow up. Right. We will make sure that your comments get to the right person, but we want to avoid promising outcomes. And then engaging with outside agencies you might be asked to do as well. So coordinate any engagement with outside agencies through the staff liaison at the council's direction. One thing I'll highlight, we're going to talk about the role with staff and you all, but all of this really should be going through staff. Staff is your professional liaison to the city. And so you want to ensure that any coordination with the press, advocacy is a little bit different, but communicating with the press or engaging with an outside agency, you always want to ensure that you're coordinating that with staff. And then you want to ensure that all communication, again, I'm like, you'll hear me say this probably 15 times throughout, is that communication aligns with city policies and aligns with council priorities. And you can go ahead and go to the next slide. And so this is one thing that I say, as a council advisory group member, our board, commission, and committee members, you're really city ambassadors. That's the way that I view our members, and that's the way that council views the members. And so we want you as city ambassadors. We want you on our team. We want you as partners with the city. So we ask that you represent the city with professional integrity, promote the city council policies and initiatives, reinforce that council is the decision maker. Council is the decision maker. I know oftentimes as in a role where you're providing advocacy, it can, you know, especially when you're on the opposite side of council, it can really feel like that you are the decision maker. And it's just always important to remember that council is the decision maker. By being informed, responsive, and engaged, members help reinforce trust in local governance. So when we talk about trust in local governance as a whole, you all play a critical role in that as well. When you take that oath to serve as a council advisory group member, you are a city official. You all know that because you're probably hearing from me now about filing your Form 700s. And I know that that's fun for everyone. That's because you're a public official. And so we want you to facilitate understanding between the council and the community and help us, right? We oftentimes face misinformation in the community, and especially in today's day and age, we're facing a lot of misinformation. It's important that our city ambassadors and our council advisory groups help us in that, right? You can help us combat misinformation with accurate information, for example. And we want you to work in partnership with city staff to develop recommendations, review policies, and ensure alignment with strategic priorities. Staff are your partners. And I know that it can feel like an adversarial role to some of our council advisory groups because you're here volunteering. You're spending a lot of time here, and your time is valued, right? And your time is valuable. Staff is here to work with you. It's one thing I always say, it's the same as you all. Staff has chosen, and I think it takes a certain person to work in public service. Staff has chosen to show up every day as well. And very different than being a volunteer because we get paid for it, but we're here because we actually care about the community. It's not something where I can come to work every day and say, man, I can't wait to violate the Brown Act. Right? We want open and transparent, and we want good and important relationships with our city ambassadors. And thank you for the photo opportunity, because when I ask for photos from our council advisory groups, it's Parks and Rec that has the most. So that's great, because we want to see you guys, right? And we want to share these pictures. And when there's events, we want to share with council, and we want you engaged with council, and we want council to know the important work you're doing. So thank you for making it easy to find great photos of the work that you guys do. Let's go ahead and jump to the next one. So again, this overall highlighting theme that I have here is the importance of alignment with city council, right? So be a resource, not a rival. That's an important one. And so again, council advisory group members should avoid in operating in adversarial roles and instead function as collaborative partners, right? If you have a differing opinion with city council, it's good. That's why we have you here. We have you here to be the eyes and ears of the city council. It's just understanding the alignment of the priorities, strategic priorities of cities, and understanding your role as an advisory member to an action body like city council. So recommendations should be well-researched, impartial, and focused on helping council achieve the best outcomes for the community. Again, it can be really easy to be really passionate about something and say, I'm going to drive this home. We want to make sure that it's the best outcome for the overall community and stay aligned with those strategic priorities and those council goals. Understand and respect that council is directly accountable to the public and balances numerous factors when making decisions. Not only the slew of emails or public comments, and there's many factors that they're making, kind of like that squeaky wheel that I mentioned before. So recommendations should be consistent with city council's approved budget, legislative platform, and strategic priorities. Those are important. Those are the three important things. Because how can we do any of this is in our budget, right? We can't do something outside of our budget or our adopted legislative platform or strategic priorities. The legislative platform piece is probably going to become real important as we hear up and down the threat of our open space, right? From our current administration, for example, I imagine that we will be having some legislation where the commission might take a position when that, that's when we need to make sure that it's in alignment with City Council's legislative platform, for example. And then do not pursue independent agendas that conflict with council priorities or established policies. And then finally, when you're acting as the eyes and ears, serve as the communication link by gathering community input and relaying it to the council. Sometimes it can feel to me, and I'm not suggesting Parks and Rec by any means, just my experience, and I'll share that I've been a city commissioner as well. In 2016, I applied for Parks and Rec Commission here. I interviewed and they didn't select me. And so, but that's okay. Parks and Rec has always been my favorite commission. But I went through that process, and then I went on. I moved up north, and in the city of Oakland, I was a commissioner for 4 years on the Public Ethics Commission. I served as their chair as well. So I bring in kind of that experience from both ends of it. But sometimes it feels like, council, we have the information you don't, because we're connected to the community and you're not. You want to be that link, you know, gather that community input and channel it to city council through the appropriate ways of getting information to city council, right? You all, the one thing that I always get frustrated on is when council says we don't have an opportunity to chat with people, sometimes it feels like we need to do that as a group. The Brown Act prevents us from being able to do that in most instances, right? However, as commissioners, and as council members, you all are it's perfectly okay to communicate with each other outside, right? A one-on-one, for example. You should have relationships with your city council members. Again, you're the link to the community, right? So that is appropriate in the right channels and lanes, but that is appropriate. So promote an understanding and trust between the community and the council by explaining city policies and decisions accurately and impartially. You can go ahead and go to the next slide. And this is the last slide here. And then I'll wrap up and available for any questions. But this is the most important one, because disagreements between the council advisory groups and council can arise, but it's essential to handle them constructively. The one important thing, again, the first one here, is respect the council decisions. Once council makes a decision, they are the final action body. If they have made a decision and you don't agree with that decision that they made, the decision is final. And we now, as city ambassadors, want you all to support the decision that city council made. And we want you to help us be that link in the community to support the decisions that city council made. And it can be challenging. And what I'll say is, trust me from a staff perspective and a city resident, it's very challenging when decisions are different than your own perspective, right? And it impacts you directly. But council is the final action body. And so respect that decision. And once they've taken a position, help us support that position. If there's personal ethical conflicts arise, then one should resign from a council advisory group. And so if you find yourself in a situation where it's just too difficult for you to separate yourself when taking that advocacy role or your involvement in the community, or there's ethical concerns around decisions that are happening, then the best option is to resign from the commission. And then to maintain constructive communication, this is an important one. Disagreements should be addressed through open dialogue with staff liaisons, right? Staff liaisons and the council. And I don't mean through a public comment or, coming to staff and, having a major disagreement in a public meeting with staff. But staff is your resource. And so you can communicate to staff. And when the council advisory group has a position that they want to share with council, you can communicate to them. You take action. You ask staff to agendize it. You take action, and the item or communication gets sent to council. So there's an avenue for that. And so staff is your liaisons through that. And so you can have that open dialogue with staff and council. Again, council through the appropriate channels. And then you want to focus on presenting alternative perspectives respectfully and factually to support decision-making. Sometimes I want to, and I'll look for an opportunity in the future to do a public comment one-on-one, about how to best be effective in your public comment or in your advisory capacity. What I can share with you is that from my years and sitting on the outside and seeing, is when you have alternative recommendations and when you have alternative perspectives to present, it becomes a little bit, the council is given a direction and can have a discussion and make a decision. A lot of times what I find is people come to say what the problem is, and they don't offer alternative perspectives or solutions. They only offer their perspective and their disagreement. And so the most effective way that I have found in communicating, not with our council, with any city council or any legislative body, is by being well-informed, well-researched, well-prepared, and making alternative actions. If somebody gets up and says to council, instead of that, you could do A, B, or C, council will look at A, B, and C, and most oftentimes, if they agree, then they'll direct staff to go with A, B, or C, right? But when you don't provide those other opportunities, then council doesn't have a direction to go in. And so I would go as far as saying, as they're a volunteer as well, they receive a $600 stipend per month, but they're not experts in everything as well, and they're volunteer in most capacities as well. And so when you provide them with those alternatives or that link in gathering the communication, it's really effective in helping them make a decision. And lastly, I'll just close with collaborative problem solving. Same thing, except in a sense that you want to work towards those solutions. Right. So when you're really struggling with a decision or there's an item that you're really passionate about, how do you collaboratively problem solve? Through solutions. One thing as well as a group of seven, consensus building is the most important thing. It's the same thing with council. So sometimes people wonder, 7-0 vote, or why did one person vote no, or whatever the case may be, or on a commission, you might say, well, I'm going to be the no vote. It's just a reminder that consensus building is how we make decisions and how we move forward. Right. And so it's important to take your stance and your position. However, without the votes, you don't have action. So sometimes I get conflicted because people will come and the there'll be so many disagreements that you walk away with no decision made. I don't know how that was a successful win for anyone. You know, you want to have a decision made, and we have to be able to make decisions and do business. So you want to work towards solutions that prioritize the city's general interests and maintain alignment with those strategic priorities. With that, I've already gone way longer than I promised myself I would. So I think I'll end there. I want to just briefly introduce Healy Royas, Assistant City Clerk, oversees boards, commissions, and committees. And then Ashley Pereira, she as well is working on boards, commissions, and committees. So Ashley will be communicating with you most likely about the Form 700. And I would be remiss if I didn't. I have one more slide. Two, and I'm going to go through them really quick, but we have a new boards, commission, committee portal, which is going live, and you all will hear about that more, but it's going to be a really great way for the community, and Ashley's been spearheading that. So if you go back, is it just one more? Yeah, so addressing the tension between council and the council advisory, this is the same thing I've been saying, so I can go over it real quick. Just remember your advisory capacity, foster collaborative relationships, support decision-making. Right. So help support the council. You can go to the next slide. And this is my final slide, I promise. So key takeaways for effective participation. Again, prepare for meetings, which I know can be challenging because we're all busy and it can be a lot. But the best way that you can effectively be in an advisory capacity is prepare for meetings, focus on the city's general interests, communicate professionally, support council's leadership, and align recommendations with those strategic priorities. Lastly, I'll just say that we acknowledge and understand that there's very little onboarding and training for our council advisory group and members. We hear a feedback loud and clear across the board, and we'll be working on, in the next couple of months, putting together two training videos for all of our council advisory groups for onboarding and a chair and vice chair specific training that we'll be working on, and we'll hope to have something in the next several months. As soon as we do, we'll be excited to share it with you all. In that, I'll go ahead and close and just say thank you again so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And thank you, staff.
Questions, commissioners?
Do we have a copy of that presentation?
Yes. Yes. Staff has a copy, and they will make it readily available.
Mm-hmm. Question.
What's the best way? I'm kind of referring back to slide 12.
Sure.
What's the best way for the public, not us, but the public, to communicate with city council? Send emails, a group email, call. What's the best way for the public to actually get through to a city council person?
That's a really good question, and I appreciate that. So it can be really challenging as a council member, you can imagine, because of the 100 emails they get. If I can take my hat off and step aside for a second from my observations, forum emails where the council receives the exact same email from 250 people with the exact same text, I'm not certain it really serves a purpose. I think emails do serve a really good purpose. I think personal stories are a really great addition when you're trying to share your emotions with city council. Form letters are not as effective. Email is probably most effective. And there's two different ways that you can contact them. There's an electronic speaker form on our website that you can submit, and it gets submitted into what's called the city's supplemental packet. And we publish all the communications that we receive. Per the Brown Act, if there's a communication that's sent to a majority of council, it must be made publicly available at the same time. So if you send an email, when folks do send an email to city council, we publish them. You can also email cityclerk@cityofventura.ca.gov if it's not time sensitive. If it's time sensitive, and I know I realize it's a lot, but there's council@cityofventura.ca.gov. It goes to all seven of them. So it just matters of, do you want your information public? Do you not want your information public? Is it a one-off to council member? Because anything you send to a majority of council that goes in a supplemental packet becomes a public record. And so your contact information, for example, can be requested under the Public Records Act.
And then I have another comment or question. It's still on number 12. Does the public share that slide 12? Because the public should probably see this. especially the speakers at city council meetings.
Well, it's kind of when I said I wish that I could spend my time. If I ever found myself with a lot of free time and I wasn't working, I'd probably start hosting public meetings on how to get public comment. Yes. I would agree that it applies to everyone, but also understand that when to get somebody to actually come to city council, they must be in a position that's really frustrating, right? Because so many folks don't come to city council. Mm-hmm. So I understand why we experience what we experience during public comment. I'm not certain it was the way that it was intended when they set up the law around public comment. And I think, you know, playing instruments, for example, for, you know, 3 minutes straight that aren't, you know, things like that. So yes, there are effective ways to get public comment, and then there are.
But if they knew that, then they might be a little more productive in their presentation and what they're trying to accomplish.
Yes.
And my last comment would be, I know this is the first time you said it's the first time you've done this.
Yeah.
It was very, very good. Thank you very much. On one of the early slides with when you had all of the chart on it, it's just very hard for us as sitting here watching it to be able to read them.
Yeah.
So maybe you want to redo the slide on that one, make the third slide or whatever it is, just the graph, that one.
Oh, yeah. That's
small separate slides so you could actually read that.
Yeah. Well, understood. It's an image. And so, yes.
Thank you.
Agreed. Thank you for
the feedback. Good job. Appreciate Thank it. You.
Yeah. Awesome.
And tons of questions?
I have a question. Do you have any thoughts or recommendations on engaging with people on social media? If we are meant to foster dialogue with approved positions, should we engage with people if you see some misinformation or some conversation happening?
Yeah, I think that is a great question, and I appreciate you asking that. And I think one of the roles as a council advisory group member or a city ambassador, as I really think you are, that there is a role that could be played with misinformation on social media. Now, with social media, you have to also keep in mind that it falls under the California Public Records Act. There could still be violations of the Brown Act. If you post something and four of your colleagues on this commission hit like, for example, it's a violation of the Brown Act. And so what I would say is I think there is a role in combating misinformation online, right, in a professional, appropriate, and when we look at the slide about how we represent the city, speaking professionally, factually, accurate, matter of fact, those types of things, I think that there is a role that can be played. There's just those considerations that have to take into play around the Brown Act and ensuring that there's not anything happening outside of a public meeting. But I do think that there is a role that can be played in responding to initial post requests, for example, about something that you might be sitting there going, I know that is 100% factually inaccurate. And there's an appropriate way to respond by saying, hey, the link to the staff report is right here. The staff report is publicly available. Mm-hmm. Something like that, I think, is appropriate, right? Because sometimes I see things online where it's like, if you could just say, here's the staff report, the recommendation is not what you're stating it is. Mm-hmm. I think there is a role to play in that regard.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just good to remember those considerations.
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
Sorry. Be considered a Brown Act violation if Parks and Rec posted something and then four of us liked it?
Staff doesn't fall under the Brown Act, but it could if you're falling under an endorsement of a project that the commission could potentially be voting on or hasn't voted on. if the commission's already voted on, it's a different scenario. But if there was a project that staff posted on that was coming before you and you all had an advisory role in making a recommendation to City Council, then if you liked the post in advance, you could find yourself having to recuse from the decision because you have already publicly stated your position outside of the meeting. So it's just important to remember those little things. Now that doesn't mean you can't like or comment on social media, right? You can like the staff's posts on social media and share them and, you know, talk about all the great work that the city is doing. Absolutely. It's just a matter of when something is before the body and you haven't decided on it and it's decision related. You know, one thing, when I first came to the city, there was big talks about how many dogs on leashes. You know what I mean? And I imagine you all might still discuss that. And so you knew an item was coming before and the city had, you know, posted something about, well, should it be 10 or 5 or whatever the numbers are, you know, you could find yourself stating an opinion before the meeting. But also understand that you're in an advisory capacity. And so final action happens at City Council, where real conflict of interest come into play around decision making. But it's just good to ensure that you're, you know, as a public official in both your personal and your life as a commissioner, sometimes it might change the way that you post or like something because you are a public official even when you sign off, for example.
Other questions, commissioners? I'd just like to say, yeah, I think it was a great presentation, and I think that our approach and the work plan has been very much in sync.
I agree.
With exactly you portrayed here. The one that one of our biggest challenges, and I don't know if there's a real easy solution for this, but is when we're really not reflected in the city's priorities.
Yep.
You know, we look through and we, hey, where's Parks and Rec? And we're like, you know, so that we're kind of at a little bit of a loss as to
short
launching. Right?
Yeah, and I get that. And I'll tell you, I'll counter it with this. I'm not certain you've ever seen city clerk in a priority or any work that a city clerk does, for example. However, all of the work that we all do is related to the greater goals in the city. And so
right.
You might not have a specific goal, but that comes from city council or a strategic priority saying, you know, this is a strategic priority. Here's the work plan. You all work with staff to get this accomplished. But the advisory work that you are all doing about our open space, our parks, our programs, and all of this, it does play into the priority of the city of creating more trust, enhancing our cultural events, and all of it.
And we read through the lines, too.
Yeah. And so it's kind of like in a professional world and outside, we say all work is relatable, right? And at the end of the day, what we're trying to do, it's all in alignment. So you might not have a specific line item. I've never had a specific line item, although arguing everything that I do in all day is attempting to reach those same goals and priorities at City Council.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Terrific.
All right.
All right. Well, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for letting me hijack Barclay
Morning. Great.
But City Clerk's office is always available. We're in room 204. You can reach out to any of us. We're happy to chat about anything, and we're here as a resource for you.
Okay.
All right.
700's done.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Good.
Yeah. Good.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Very good. So now we are on to public communications, and we have two members of the public who have joined us to communicate. First up, Teresa Burgess.
I'd like to defer to Dean.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll defer to Dean. You're gonna give him your time, or you?
No, well, just we're gonna. And as a matter of being influential with you
front
folks,
there.
I will leave that with you.
You'll speak from
this in. And I know it's gonna shock you folks that I'm not here to talk about the tennis court services, but
I thought it was a grass court issue at this
point. How did you know? Chairman, commissioners, thank you for being here this afternoon. I am here to note in the photographs that there is a rather dramatic patch of dirt adjacent to the tennis courts at Memorial. And they're situated, just so happens, next to one of the best known old man's butterflies here in the city. Nothing has really been wrong. So the latest monarch test had tragic results. The Xerces Society, another group that monitors the species, takes part in a yearly assessment, and their count. Does it help if I stand over here so you guys can eyeball me?
Yeah, the front would be the best.
We're looking at your pictures.
Another group that monitors the species takes part in a yearly assessment, and the result was really tragic. They noted some 9,000. This is a collapse, really. By their reckoning, this is the second lowest population count they've tracked since 1997. That's the decline is, well, there was 200,000 last year. So, since this area is not irrigated in any way, shape, or form, and there's no cultivated plants on site, we would like to plant local natives, known to be important nectar and food sources for the butterflies. There are suggested plants for the species, and once established, they would not need supplemental water. I believe it's a win-win situation. The park gets local plants that are drought tolerant, beautifies the area, and also helps support an important species of insect that is clearly threatened at this time. So we're fortunate that we have sufficient volunteers that seems will be willing to come out and plant with us, and also water until they have enough water to support themselves. Even suggesting maybe we'd like to have a planting day to all when that moment comes. The part of the city might be just to the cost of maybe helping purchase some of these plants. And finally, before I cease my proposal, I'd like to recognize that I'm joined by the lovely Dr. Terry Burgess here, who is one of the board members of the California Native Plant Society here in the Channel Islands District. And she's been kind enough to join the California Native Plant Society to help this project happen. And so I know she needs to go, so I'm going to jump back to my seat and let her have it.
And I was going to stand up in the front of the room because I kind of like to see, do professory kind of things. So, yes, I'm on the board of the local chapter, which is Channel Islands. And I have been involved in building several native gardens. So I feel like I have the experience. I definitely have the passion to build native gardens, and it's really inexpensive. You know, I don't really know what your budget is like, but I just partnered with the Ojai Raptor Center. We put in over 200 plants. They're absolutely thriving, all volunteer work, less than $1,000 of plants. You know, plants with between 5 and 10, and we are maintaining that as well. These bare dirt areas are just, they're just an eyesore, and it drives me nuts because native plants require no fertilizer, no water after the first 6 to 12 months, a little bit of pruning, which is my favorite thing to do in the garden, and really, you know, not a fire hazard. And I want to really emphasize that. My house burned in the Thomas Fire. Everything burns. You know, we need to understand that everything burns. It's not near any structures, so it would be a problem. We would promise payment. It's pretty easy. Both Dean and I have gorgeous native plant gardens in our yards. And, you know, the wonderful thing about native plants is they come back after fire, so it doesn't kill them. And that's really where this misconception about native plants and fire comes from, because they did evolve with fire, but they didn't evolve to burn, they evolved to live. So I hope you consider our proposal. Pretty much said everything in my notes, and I am very passionate. If you have a chance to visit the Ojai Raptor Center, the new garden around the Tanner Building is going to be an absolute showstopper, and we're really excited. I was supposed to be there today weeding, but it was supposed to rain, so we didn't go. Anyways,
question. It looked like this area is a walkway and an area where people are sitting, walking around. Does that make sense to plant in that kind of an area where people are moving around?
There is a bench on either side of the gateway, two gateways that enter from what is the eastern side of, you know, of the tennis courts. And neither anything we're suggesting would not impede the seating at those benches at all. I have not detailed, Terry and I haven't detailed the number of plants involved here, but I don't anticipate we would have more plants and would still allow safe travel between some sort of easement between the fence line, let's say, and say some 3 feet away from the courts themselves. So, you know, we still have access to that fence line. I would say that's probably somewhat similar to along the sidewalk itself there that allows patrons to enter the park from around Arroyo or Arroyo or whatever that is there that comes around the park. So I think that, you know, these are details we certainly can work through that I think are these are easy problems to solve. Low-hanging fruit.
And I would say, keep in mind, we can ask clarifying questions, but because this item is not agendized, commission cannot have a conversation connected to the project or anything along those lines.
Interesting. I would just like to sort of emphasize some of the other things that Dean said. And one is about what a horrible shape the monarch is. Can you imagine life without our monarchs? You know, they're so important. And what we're proposing is during the overwintering stage, the butterflies need nectar. They don't need milkweed. In fact, it's not considered a good thing to put milkweed near the overwintering sites because that's where they lay their eggs. So we're talking about building things, growing things that will be beautiful in the winter, in the summer, so that those monarchs that are in our area have something to eat. The adult butterflies.
And then just a clarifying question. Have you submitted an official proposal yet to the department to be able for anyone?
No.
Okay. So what I would recommend is to submit a proposal to the department. Then that's the opportunity to.
So what's the department? The Department of Park and Rec?
Parks and Recreation. Yeah. And we can provide that information. You would submit the proposal and then the department looks at it in terms of work plan. So obviously, as Parks and Recreation Commission knows, the department sets their work plan for the next year to 5 years. And so anytime a community member or a community group has a proposal or an idea, we take that into consideration in terms of what's the current work plan? Is there a potential for it to be a fit in the near future? Is there something already going on?
Yeah.
And we can get you that.
And so timing wise, is it too late for this cycle of your work plan?
Well, we're currently within our fiscal year. Fiscal year go from July until
June.
So what I would say for more information, I would say if you submit the work plan, then we can have a team member get back to you.
Okay. So that sounds great.
Sort of we're out of step, but I wanted to get your influential selves into the program, so to speak.
Just we're not asking for you guys to do more work. You already do plenty.
Thank you very much. All right. I'll move on to our consent items. And approval of the minutes from a previous meeting. Do you have any edits?
Would you like your photos?
I'm going to hand some over to the director, I think. Yep.
Nope.
Do you want us to
more photos?
I think those we let you have those.
Okay. We'll give them to staff. Thank you.
All right. We have no edits or amendments to the minutes. Do we have a motion to approve?
I didn't see any edits. Motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second.
All right. We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes from our previous meeting. Marcus?
Ed Wood?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Question. I wasn't here. Do I just abstain then? Is that the best format?
Do either.
You're allowed to vote for it, but I would.
Abstain, yeah.
Commissioner Shelton?
Yes.
Commissioner Tovar?
Yes.
Commissioner Miller? Commissioner Velez?
Yes.
All right. It's approved. And now we go to the Parks and Recreation Commission 2025 work plan.
And I will say we do have a very brief presentation for you. It is a giant one slide. So I figured we can go. It's exciting. We'll go through the one slide and then turn it back over to the commission per usual for you to discuss since our last meeting, what items that you have worked on and then which items you would like to propose for the next month. So next slide So the component of the work plan that we're going to discuss is connected to the rating of the unfunded capital improvement projects. I know everyone in this room submitted their ranking sheet. So the sheet that Stephen sent that showed here the list of the unfunded projects. Some are on the if the city receives grant funding, if the city receives grant funding and there is a matching component, if funding becomes available. But all of them are on that list and not currently in that 1 to 5 year plan that we're working on. So in that action plan. So you went through the list. We got the numbers. And next slide. When we looked at the average, when it comes to the ranking, it's tiny. I know. We were just in another room and the screen was huge. I can see this because I'm here. But the way it ranked, we took everyone's scores and then we did the average based on the number. Every commissioner aside from one submitted scores. And so with that, the top five were pretty consistent. So one and two was the Camino Real parking lot and street resurfacing, as well as Camino Real tennis and pickleball courts. When we did the average, they were neck and neck. Coming in then as number two was the Olivas Golf Course trailer replacement. And then we had another neck and neck for the number three spot, which was the Arroyo Verde irrigation retrofit, and then the Buenaventura Golf Course rebuild. Now, big picture, it's wonderful to get commission input because it gives us a sense as we're looking at funding, as we're looking at grant opportunities. Often council will ask too. It doesn't detract from the importance of all of these projects, but it was nice to see that consistently the commission had those top five. So what we are asking, because we like to do this on a annual basis, is for you to look at this list. If the commission is in agreement that as a group you are comfortable with this rating, so the top two, one, the two, and the three, that you make a motion to approve the ranking that occurred, and then you'll get to move on to the next phase of the work plan, which is sharing what you did this past month and then what we'll be doing next month.
We got shackled from this.
Exactly. You can move.
All right. Do we have any conversation comments related to the prioritization?
No, I think that the exact order that's in, I like that.
Yeah, I think it looks good to me.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah, I could here and there, but among the five, however you call it, big three, I kind of round it up. I think it's the right group of stuff.
I guess I had a different ranking as far as I put the Westside Community Pool higher because of how much use the current pool gets, that like people complain about out-of-towners coming and such. And so to have that capacity on the west side for what I understand to be a historically underprivileged, underserved community, seems like it, for me, I wanted to rank that much higher than the golf course, which I think aligns with the priority of community over special interest groups. I know a lot of people use the golf course, but I think far more people use the pool and far more people would use another pool. And so that's where I'm happy to support our selection, but I would maybe like to get that West Side Pool as our last one, but that's just my opinion.
So question for staff, the column on the right there, that's our average ranking based upon aggregating all of our scores together. Okay.
If I could add a little bit more, there's a column for when it was added to the plan, and that pool has been on there since 2003 as a project, whereas the golf course just popped on last year. And I don't know how a golf course rebuild will weather future storm events. So maybe we're just going to be putting more money into it again and again and again, whereas a pool, I don't think there's been any issues with pools weathering climate change unless they're in a terribly located spot. And then as we have more heat days with climate change, the pool will give people a resource to cool off versus waiting to take a tea time.
I don't know if I can ask, but what generates more funding for the city, the golf course or The aquatic center.
The golf course. Pools are always going to work in the red, and for the West Side Community Pool, it was a joint endeavor with the school district, and neither were able to commit to ongoing funding for the operations of the pool, neither the city or the USC.
And I think that might be why you see some of us who have been around prioritize it lower, because we kind of understand that.
Right, you certainly.
And know that it's, you know, pipe dream, basically.
Yeah. And I sympathize certainly with that. And I will say in full transparency that I too ranked the golf course lower, which is why I think on average it's lower on the five than perhaps one or two. So I share your concerns, but also I think to Chair Wood's point, there the West Side Pool is something I think we all want to see. But it's just been so hard to cobble up however much money that is. I think it was $20 million to do it. And I hesitate to add any projects outside of that list of five, because if I'm understanding staff correctly, that's what the consensus of the group was when you average them all out. So I don't really want to pull a project up necessarily, as important as it might be, because I think the goal of this is a consensus of the seven of us. This is the five that we thought on average. Because yeah, I had, I'll be transferring, I had Buenaventura ranked like six or seven myself, but because other people ranked it higher, it all averages. Yeah. So that's my stance.
Just a question for those a little closer to the board. Where does the West Side Pool rank?
The West Side Pool is in the number eight spot. Mm-hmm. But there are three that ranked at eight. So it's
third from bottom.
Yeah. Two, three at an eight.
So it's on the bottom half.
Right. And the other thing, is there sources of information about these projects beyond just their title? Because I was looking for information about, like, the two projects that are in development, clearly there's much information about that. But the other ones, like some of the Pettit retaining wall replacement, I know where Pettit Street is. I can guess where a retaining wall would be on it. But other than that, I'm like, I don't know what this is.
I believe in the email that Stephen sent, he sent the link to the Capital Improvement Project book, which has information about the project.
I didn't find anything other than their name again in there.
Okay, interesting.
Their name's there, but no information.
It seems like we've seen it in the past.
There's a description. The title, the description.
The location.
Literally ballpark amount and when it was originally entered. It's like when she kind of overviewed.
Yeah, to me, that wasn't enough information to. For some,
we may be disabled.
Same things.
We'll check and see if that's in there.
That is it, because there are not projects that exist. There's not a scope.
Right.
You know, there isn't a lot of information.
They're not fleshed out.
Right. I get it. Yeah. And so I was just wondering, okay, this is all the information I'm basing my opinion on here.
One sheet, almost like grid, looking for.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, all right. Just didn't want to make sure I was missing because of the information that you guys had about the West Side Pool of this, funding capacities and maintenance and that relationship, nowhere near to be found. It's just
CIP book. That's like
just institutional knowledge that's translated now. I am picking up now. Very good. Okay.
I think I rank the golf course similarly, both for its influence on the city budget and for its recreation value. We've had so many people saying how much they want it. And we've invested so much time and money already in figuring out how to rebuild
it. It has momentum, right?
The hydrology studies and the FEMA. No. So I think that one definitely has value in a lot of ways. Many of my top five were infrastructure related. Things like that retaining wall that had been on there for a really long time. Like, you know, I just want, if we're going to do anything first, then let's kind of take care of that irrigation business and the Camino Real road, if possible. The streets there are pretty rough, you know, those sorts of things. And so the recreation choices probably fell lower on my ranking, just to prioritize infrastructure.
Nice, Terry.
I would I love, this is great. It's fine. I will vote yes on this. But I had a tough time with the Buenaventura Golf Course rebuild as one of my top ones, I believe, because I kind of felt like maybe FEMA money and insurance money and those things were going to help. And I didn't really need to have that one as high as, say, a Royal Verde Park trail retrofit, fixing, whatever. I don't know. I'm surprised that it's that much money to do the I can't quite see which one does. It's Verde Park trail upgrades. That park. That park. No, not the trailer. It's the trail.
Oh, the trail.
Which is four. It's in the four range with all the others. So it's kind of in there with the golf course, I would imagine. But I just would like to see that done because people use that park like crazy, and they're using the Harmon Canyon trails like crazy. And it'd be nice if we could maybe take a look at, does it really need to cost $700,000 to do that? And can we get that kind of on our radar a little more, or have some groups help with getting that one done? Because I drive on Foothill every day. And it's always packed, people walking across the street, parking. I mean, it's just, we use that park. And yes, I will vote yes on this for sure. But I'd love us to really get that one done. It's not a high priced one. And it's so used.
I actually have a question maybe for staff, because I know the Arroyo Verde irrigation retrofit, there was some irrigation work that's already been done out there, right?
That was from the Thomas fire. It burned down the pump station. So that area was replaced. And then we do piecemeal and address things along with our land irrigation controllers as we can. But like our irrigation lighting infrastructure is dated throughout the parks.
Yeah.
That's even last week or last meeting when we talked about that Parks and Open Space element. We were talking about the Parks and Rec Master Plan. Mm-hmm. The intent is something like that would fit in there to be able to do the study on a long-term plan for irrigation maintenance, upgrades, and something like that would fall into it.
Because I imagine most of what's at Arroyo is still like original backbone infrastructure from when they built that park in the 60s, which is, yeah. It's going to be at the end of its lifespan if it's not there already.
Yeah, we have multiple mainline breaks there all the time.
Yeah.
It's almost an every other week occurrence. And then usually about every other month, a large mainline break.
Yeah, wow.
Okay, that seems important.
One more question. As far as what's fundable, what's the budget for this 5-year plan? Can the anticipated parks budget absorb these costs?
No, none of them. And that's the great part about this exercise. There's no funding for any of those. But I think it's important to show the priorities, right? And so the council can see what we're reflecting the community's priorities. And for the things that have momentum, right, where there is maybe there's grant money and different things kind of in process, that we show that yes, we agree, we're in support of this initiative. That's my perspective.
Yeah, and if I can add on to that, I think hopefully this list, if it gets its way to council as part of our report or whatever, combined with when we were at priorities meeting in February, all I talked about was deferred maintenance. And when you look at this list, it's deferred maintenance with the exception of the golf course rebuild. But, you know, that's just a disaster that happened that, you know, got to deal with. But
although I believe it's just kind of deferred maintenance, really.
Right. Yeah. So and I shared Chair Turner's thoughts or Vice Chair Turner's thoughts about the trails as well. I think that missed it by one. I agree with others.
You don't like running straight uphill?
I do, but it's just the rust.
I know.
The one, yeah.
It's really uneven, the erosion channels.
And that park is so well loved. I mean, I can't think of a better term for it other than well loved. If you drive past there, especially on a Saturday or a Sunday, it's unbelievable how trapped that is. So.
And it is a safety issue.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's also why I ranked all parking lot street resurfacings at the bottom, because if people are driving slow through parking lots, that's fine with me. They said every pothole to me is a speed bump that makes you drive slower. And every park, every parking lot, everyone needs to drive slower.
Unless you walk and fall in it.
Mm, yes. Right. Yeah, unless you step in it.
Then you sue the city.
Lived in Ventura a long time?
Yeah, 20 years.
Exactly.
I've come to know
potholes.
So,
yeah,
not as
fair point.
It's about resurfacing, because to me it serves a safety. It reverses the safety issue where it forces cars to slow down on their own because they're cognizant of what's happening versus on coast mode. And so just for me personally, that's why I didn't rank some of these resurfacing things. And I put the trails higher. I put the pool higher because that's what I think like people were going to use as an amenity. That's what the city should be offering, is amenities to use versus a nice parking lot.
And just to chime in real quick, I know Chairwood was making a joke out of Sue the City, but it's true. Like, now we're open to liability. Now we have planes coming in, and we have to start maintaining what we currently have before we build new. You know, because then we just keep getting further and further behind. And I think the commission is doing such a fabulous job in a unified messaging that I think is starting to land, because after Commissioner Shelton's comment at the strategic session, they literally pulled out, we weren't included in infrastructure as one of the priority areas. And after your public comments, which you all supported, that he made on behalf of the commission, they called us out and included us finally in infrastructure as a priority for our department.
Yep.
Good boy.
Huge. Really huge. Made a difference.
I know, it's great, great conversation. I mean, a lot of great points, I think, have been raised. Based on that, would anyone like to change any of their votes? I mean, that'd be the only way to me that we would alter this list.
Now, the only thing I would be comfortable changing personally would be is if you wanted to add, because Arroyo Verde Park trail upgrades are four and it's not tied with anything. It goes 1, 2, 3, 3, 3, and then 4 alone is the Arroyo Verde Park trail upgrades. If you wanted to add that to the list, I know that would make 6 bullet points, but I don't know how important that was to you, Vice Chair.
I agree with that 100%.
And since Chair Commissioner Christensen also identified that, maybe we can just add, if that's permissible, add that one additional bullet point since it's not tied.
Yeah, I don't know that 5 is a hard number necessarily, especially since we have the ties. And it, yeah, it does tie in to the other item that's already on the list.
Yeah.
Irrigation at the park. So I could support that.
Okay.
And I would say big picture, the 5 priorities is what's called out so that the commission can see it. The list in its ranked order is what we hold on to in terms of what the commission ranked. So it doesn't mean that, you know, 6 and below fall off the list or don't have the same importance level. So it's for us, it's one complete list. It was more to showcase and highlight, here are the top 5.
Yeah.
Please.
Vice Chair, then.
I still kind of go back to the Buenaventura Golf Course Rebuild 2025. It's a kind of a new item that I think is we're already pushing to get done with money that we do have. And like I was saying earlier about the FEMA money or whatever else, it's insurance money that may make that happen. It's almost really, I don't know if I should say this or not, but it's really not a non-financial CIP, right?
It's definitely financial FEMA.
Oh, yeah.
Front the 14 million.
Oh, yeah.
You know, plus. So it's.
Yeah, we're asking the city to put up a lot of dough.
Yeah.
So, what do you think we should do? Should we put 6 up there or should we just leave it like it is?
I think what's your suggestion? I'm saying that whole list matters to our whole department.
Okay.
The rankings don't change, And I think the call out was just to help guide the conversation. The entire list matters to our department.
Well, I would be glad to make a motion to, if we're ready to do that.
I'm sorry.
Can we talk a little bit about the Olivas Golf Course trailer replacement? What is that? Is there any?
Yes, the current bathroom and the current pro shop, makeshift pro shop, they're the original trailers that have been there since, I think, 2005, 2006.
Mm.
They're dilapidated and done.
Okay.
Previously, it was listed as unfunded because we weren't approved to use the golf reserve fund. Council has approved, and that is actually in process to replace. And it's a safety issue and a customer issue. We are purchasing with intent. Council also approved to go into permanent design for facilities. So our intent is, if that funding is identified, then we would sell the trailers. But right now, the current trailers are being leased and they're unsafe and unfit.
Got it. Okay. So if you've got funding for design, it's still unfunded to replace them.
No, we are using the golf reserve fund to purchase new trailers that was approved, plus using the golf reserve fund to design permanent facilities.
So it will be done, basically.
Okay.
So that went to council maybe a month ago.
Okay.
To replace those trailers.
Oh, super.
Yeah.
And then we can take that off the list when it's done and move something else up.
Yeah. Okay. So that's already. Yeah. That's good news.
So the trailers are happening, and the Buenaventura Golf Course rebuild is happening. In that, we're doing a temporary 9-14 hole, and we're in the works of flood mitigation design and also working with consultants on how to maximize FEMA reimbursement. Mm-hmm. So the Buena is happening, and the Camino Real Park. The trailers. And the trailers are happening. And then the tennis courts and pickleball, we're reapplying for the grant again. It's a competitive grant, and that's not in a low income disadvantaged area. We will not score those points, but we are reapplying for that grant. Tennis court rebuild and the new amenities of pickleball courts.
All right, any other comments regarding our prioritization?
No, I mean, with that knowledge, that helps me feel good about moving up the trail line item on the list.
All right. So at this point, we've got our five highlighted priorities. We have the complete list of ranked priorities of unfunded CIP projects. Do we have a motion to approve?
I'd like to try to kind of amend the motion, though, to approve the Parks and Rec preliminary six priority rankings, adding the Arroyo Verde trails to the list.
If I can make a recommendation, I would recommend potentially the Parks and Recreation make a motion to approve the list as presented based on commission rankings. So you're including the entire list, which shows the 1-6 as well as 7-9. So this is the entire list.
I would make that motion.
Well,
go ahead and make it then.
Everything's included.
You have that?
Motion to approve the complete list. And we have a second?
With six bullet points.
No, that was not part of it.
Yes.
The six bullet points is just part of the slide.
Okay.
So the list is these are the projects that you're voting on.
The entirety.
This Stephen just added this to the slide to be able to
show. Okay, fair enough.
So we can read it.
You shouldn't be confused. Because it's hard to
read. It's small.
Yeah.
So we're just adopting the raw list.
Yes.
Which is those five bullet points. The first five on that list.
Okay. Yes, that's fine.
I'll second that if we. Yes. Yes. Second.
So the motion is to approve the complete list.
Complete list.
Yes.
There we go.
All right. Voting Chair Wood.
Yes.
Vice Chair Turner.
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Shelton?
Yes.
Commissioner Tovar?
Yes.
Commissioner Miller? Commissioner Velez?
Yes.
All right, very good. Now, do we have any other, I don't know that we have any other comments or work we want to do on the 25 work plan today? Or updates from the previous meeting?
Well, I know I submitted my things to Stephen.
Yes.
So, and I'm sure you all did as well.
I will say Stephen's absence was unexpected. So if you submitted anything to be showcased in today's PowerPoint, it's not there, but we will include it in the next one. Yeah.
All right. I'd say maybe let's table this conversation then until the next meeting.
Yeah, I think at our next meeting, it'd be good for us to plan out the next few months of if we want to go back out on our road show to the community council. So yeah, let's discuss in April. But
yeah, that's good. That sounds good. And then he can update us on any other things that are going on. And unless maybe with food department communications, we might get some information as well. Absolutely. Upcoming events. So let's move on to department communications.
So we have a number of opportunities. Most of them you've probably heard about, and I'm standing because my vision is, I miss the big TV that we used to have in here. But as most of you know, we have our upcoming July 4th event. So vendor applications are out. If you know of any arts and craft vendors, please send them to the city's website. It's an opportunity for them to showcase the amazing work that they do. We'll be continuing with the kids area. We have a number of different community partners. We have a car show, so really excited. There will definitely be an opportunity come July for anyone that wants to participate. We wrapped up the end of the BYPA season. It was incredibly successful. Stephen has some photos he's going to share, but also share who made it to the finals. But we really appreciate the volunteer coaches that gave so much of their time to, you know, take a team, to teach them the skills of, you know, Rev 101 basketball. And then really appreciate all of the participants and their families, too, who got them there. Wanted to let you know, we have our public art collection. We have over 240 public art pieces. We have a virtual component, which some of you may or may not be aware of. But for anyone out of the city or in the city who may not know what we have in the collection or may not have the ability to get out to the different areas of the city, you can actually go to this section on our website, and we work with the GIS team so that you can go and pinpoint in a specific area, west side, east side, et cetera. You see images of the public art piece, and then you get a little bit of information about the artist. I will say it's also a fun tracking tool. We've had a number of school groups that have used it to get a sense of public art, but it includes the utility boxes, it includes murals, the mosaic work, the sculptures.
Where can that be found?
So that's on the city's website. So the Parks and Rec website under Arts and Culture in Public Art. So, and I'll have Stephen send you the link to it.
It's under Parks and Rec.
It's under Parks and Rec. We also have summer activity guides. So spring is just wrapping up. Summer is underway. We actually approved the final version of the summer guide. So it will be going out very shortly. It's very excited. We do have a section in the very front about commissions. Cultural Funding Grant Program, deadline is March 28th. If you know of an arts organization or a cultural organization that's a 501c3 or that has a 501c3 partner, please send them to the city's website. Typically, the funding is about $90,000. This year, because we have 13,000 rolled over, it's $103,000. So grants go up to $20,000. And it's for programs, services, and activities offered by these arts and cultural organizations that directly go to city residents. So for arts classes, for events, for historic programs and things like that. But please, please help us get the word out there. Corporate games. Anybody participated in corporate games before? Yes. So signups are underway. The games start very soon. We'll get some great action shots. And Tanner, are you participating this year?
I am.
You'll have to share more with the committee.
I will. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. I think I'm going to be doing, what was I asked? Oh, the volunteer opportunity. That's where I'm landing this year. But I mean, you can do the 5K. There used to be sandcastle building, softball, soccer. Mm-hmm. Most of you already know about it. And then last but not least, which we will send the information out, there is a showcase, an open house at West Park this April. So it's an opportunity to let the community know about all the amazing activities going on at West Park. Summer programs, ceramics classes, youth music programs. And then there's also going to be a showcase of some of our community partners, as well as other departments. So Stephen will send you the information. We encourage anyone to be able to attend. This could be something that you may decide as a commission, one or two if you want to, maybe send the chair and vice chair. But again, you can attend as a commissioner, even if you're not in your commissioner capacity, just to be able to see the event, experience it, and interact with the community.
What's the date on that one?
That is April 11th from 4 to 7 p.m. It's a Friday. So, and Stephen will send all the information out. Okay, and next slide. Last but not least is golf. So, Stacey could touch base a little bit about the two projects that are moving forward with golf. But wanted to let you know from a communication standpoint, anyone in the community that asks you about the two golf courses, what are the projects, where are we at, what's going on with FEMA, the communications team, Kemper Golf, and the city manager's office, working with our department, has put together kind of a landing page with that information. So the QR code here, which again, we'll send this, Stephen will send this out to you. In every single golf cart at Olivas is this mini poster. This lets folks know, regardless of the golf course, scan the QR code, go to the website, and this is where you get the latest and greatest on the projects. We also have at Olivas links, we have the project timeline, which gives folks a general sense of where in the world are we at. So for that, we talk about phase one, which is where we're at, the FEMA application progress, temporary 9 to 14 hole golf course, et cetera. And then it moves all the way over to the final phases when we talk about reopening the golf course. So it mentions the temporary 9 to 14 hole, and then it talks about what the process will be for us to potentially reopen back to the 18 hole golf course. And then last but not least, it provides the projects for the Olivas Links that Stacy mentioned. So purchasing and installing the new restroom and golf shop trailers, I will say, I will show you pictures at one point of what the current trailers look like. Definite safety issue. Mm-hmm. Chair Wood, you're
right there.
Yes. So this is something that we're really excited that we just were able to find funding to be able to purchase. And then we also have had funding approved to look at the design of permanent facilities. Just like with most things, a design is a design. Mm-hmm. If the design is approved, in order for us to actually build those facilities, we would have to identify funding as well. But like I said, this is the best place to send folks, because I know you get bombarded with questions. This is the best place to go.
Is there a place where that, that QR code is on the website?
Yes. So this is on the website, this is on the website, and then Kemper Sports with our communications team, any updates that come through the pipeline, they'll be on the website.
So, and where on the website, how do we find it?
So it's in the Parks and Rec section under golf courses. Right. I'll have Stephen send the link because I'm very familiar with the website, and even I sometimes.
Yeah. As long as we can point people to the Parks and Rec section.
Send them to the Parks and Rec section, all right? Anything else to add from a park standpoint?
Yes. So Westside Skate Park construction, that's continuing. There was the slight design change, and that was hopefully posted this afternoon. If not, it will be up by tomorrow. So you guys can see there was the small redesign that they had to do. So that's going to be shown on the website. And if it isn't already up, I really think it should already be up because I did get an email on that one. Marina Park construction is beginning. The structure was delivered. They demoed. They were supposed to be demoing, and there was supposed to be an inspection this afternoon of the foundation area so that the new foundation could get started. So that was supposed to occur this afternoon. But hopefully, I don't see rain, so hopefully they moved forward on that. And that will be a fast project. From what I'm understanding, they're saying 4 to 5 weeks. So awesome. We'll move fast. The pre-construction meeting occurred this week for the Cabrillo Village multi-use path. I'm not sure if any of you guys know about this. It's at the end of Sabaquoi, and they are doing some bioretentions and a small path. And eventually all of that is going to be tied into the Santa Paula Trail that will be occurring. So that pre-construction meeting was this week. They're hoping to start that project at the end of Sabaquoi Road on the week of March 24th. The North Bank Median off Johnson, that one was completed. There's some other items that is going on over there.
Yeah, when you mentioned, I saw that. It looks very nice. Yeah.
Thank you. There is also over there off North Bank, there is a linear park over there also that is missing some split rail fencing and some other stuff like that. That is also being addressed. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping to have all of that done in the next 2 to 4 weeks. The solar project at Community Park, the tie-in is scheduled. It will be 3 nights in a row. They'll be from 10 p.m. to approximately 5 a.m. And that is going to be the official connection with Southern California Edison of tying that in. And so that's occurring April 8th, 9th, and 10th. And other than that, we are actually doing interviews for the senior landscape inspector. The gentleman who has held that position, he just celebrated a few months ago, 30 years. And so he is retiring. And so we are currently going to be doing interviews here in about a week. And we're hoping to fill that position. And other than that, winter maintenance is occurring in all the parks. And we are looking at all the benches, barbecues, tables, all of that type of work is going on right now. Should do it.
All right. Thank you very much. Commission communications. The commissioners have any items you'd like to communicate? Vice Chair.
Real quick, Surfers Point, if you've all been down there, they have got all of the old debris out of there. They've laid cobble foundation and they're just rolling right along. Marina Park, yes, I was just down there. They've got big holes and most of the sand piled up, and I don't know where they're probably going to end up taking that away for some reason, but it's looking good down there. And then on April 5th, everyone here and everyone in the city is invited to the Ventura Yacht Club's open house. So that's an open house for anyone in the city that would like to come and check out the Ventura Yacht Club.
And this, the Cybertruck Reef, is that? I saw you comment on that.
I was actually out paddling and I saw all the commotion. I didn't go over there. I normally would, but I didn't. And then I got home and I was like, oh my gosh, I just saw that. That's shocking.
I don't have any necessarily input, but I get a couple of questions. Let's see. One was related to the Arbor Day. Oh, sorry, Arbor Day. There was supposed to be a tree planting today.
Yes.
Did that happen?
Yes, it did.
I bailed, so
I couldn't make it up. So
unfortunately, I only sent the note to Stephen, so I apologize. And then I saw a big write-up on kind of a major project that Port Hueneme has going on that they got a lot of grant money for. I'm assuming maybe they got some disadvantaged neighborhood money, but some giant park, and there's like millions of dollars of grant money and some other money that they used to kind of do we kind of know about that? Is anything we can learn from that?
We don't have the details from that. I know the grant that we're applying for connected to Kuna Real, so the tennis courts and pickleball, it could be connected to that because that grant is really looking at building new parks and resources, but you have to have the land to be able to do that. But no, we're not familiar with Port Wayne. You did not reach out to us.
Okay. Yeah, just curious. It looked pretty cool, but I didn't know anything about it. I hadn't heard anything about it.
In terms of grants for new parks facilities, those are a little more challenging on our end. A lot of what we're looking at is how do we enhance and maintain our current parks and facilities, but we are always on the lookout for grant funding.
All right. Then do we have any other items for the good of the order? And if not, then we are adjourned.
Hey.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Great meeting.
I tell Stephen he was sorely missed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Shoot.
And if anyone's interested, Arts and Culture Commission tomorrow, we'll review the Arts and Culture element, Joan McNulty. Our meeting's usually 2 hours.